Lecture 17, Powerful Affirmations Excite My Stem Cells to Action. Santa's Gift Program to Me Seminar, How I Train My Genie Stem Cells. So, Powerful Affirmations Excite My Stem Cells to Action. And, four of them are, I like me, I'm divine order, I am peace. My stem cells reveal my original purity and integrity in me. Wow, that is great. We'll say that over and over again now for an hour. What is an affirmation for? We've been speaking about it before, but what is an affirmation for? What does an affirmation do? Anybody know? An affirmation is a statement of truth that reminds me of who I am and what I am, said Sylvia Maria Enns. An affirmation does what?
Reminds me of who and what I am.
Reminds me of who and what I am. Is that true? Is that true?
Yes.
Oh, you say no? You say an affirmation doesn't remind you of who and what you are? What does an affirmation say to you, Ingeborg?
The affirmation is something that helps my, not helps, that enters my brain and acts upon it.
An affirmation is something that enters your brain and your whole body acts upon it. Well, that's an interesting way of putting it too. Any other suggestion of what you think an affirmation might be? Ellen? What's an affirmation? Christina, what's an affirmation?
My reality.
An affirmation confirms your reality. In other words, an affirmation says who and what you are, like Sylvia had said. Who and what you are. Yes, Ellen?
I just think that was perfect.
What was perfect?
What Sylvia said.
It was not. It was not perfect. Can you repeat it?
An affirmation is a statement of truth which reminds me of who and what I am.
An affirmation is a statement of truth that reminds me of who and what I am. And Christina, what did you say?
An affirmation confirms my reality.
An affirmation confirms my reality. Is that true?
Yeah.
And Ingeborg, what did you say?
It is an affirmation. It enters automatically in my brain and then
an affirmation enters my brain and my body acts upon it. And Sylvia, what did you really say after we muddled it up? What did
I really said that an affirmation is a statement of truth that reminds me of who and what I am.
An affirmation is a statement of truth that reminds me of who and what I am. Gertrude, what do you think an affirmation is? An affirmation is a reminder.
Yeah.
About what?
What I am.
An affirmation is a reminder of who I am.
Yeah.
And what I am. Okay. And now, Anita.
Okay. An affirmation is my confirmation and my awareness to myself of who I am, of what I know who I am.
An affirmation is a confirmation of my awareness of who I am and what I am.
An affirmation is like a spoken out awareness of myself, of who I am. I speak in words the awareness of who I am in reality.
In other words, when you are aware of who you are, you can speak an affirmation about who you are.
You can always speak an affirmation of who you are.
You can always speak an affirmation of who you are.
Yes.
But what happens when you speak an affirmation of who you are?
I live it. I live who I am.
Why?
Reality. Because I live in the constant awareness of...
You live in the reality of your affirmation when you speak it. And so you live in your reality when you speak your affirmations. Because your affirmations are your reality. Is that you, I want to repeat what you're saying.
Yeah. It somehow sounds strange.
Say it. Right. Like you believe it. An affirmation is a confirmation. You said?
It's really an affirmation. It's a confirmation of my reality.
That is a confirmation of my reality. Okay. Now, are any of you incorrect?
No.
Yes.
Are any of you better than anybody else?
Yes.
What?
Yes. Because in the title, we have powerful affirmations excite my stem cells to action.
Powerful affirmations excite my stem cells to action. Well, all of these statements that have been made are presumably about powerful affirmations.
Yes, they are.
They're all presumably about something that is beneficial for us. That excite myself, yeah. Now, they excite my stem cells to action. Now, you're right in your observations, Ingeborg, but you want to say, and also... Because otherwise you say someone might be wrong, and they're not wrong, are they? They're just and also. Okay, now and also. Powerful affirmations excite my stem cells to action. What sort of action does an affirmation like I like me excite in me, in you? When you say I like me, what happens inside of you when you say that? Yes?
I am happy. I am expressing the ideal that I am.
You are expressing the...
The ideal.
The ideals, or ideal.
No, the ideal that I am, my original purity and integrity.
You're expressing the ideals that you are, your original purity and perfection.
Purity and integrity and my wholeness and perfection.
Your purity and integrity, your wholeness and perfection. If I don't repeat it, it doesn't get onto the microphone,
yeah.
And you might not have said it. I mean, it wouldn't have made any difference if you said it. But I want it to come on, you know, because I want you to be part of this presentation, and you are. Okay. Yes?
Yeah, when I say I like me, it catalyzes a feeling which feels right.
When you say I like me, it catalyzes a feeling that feels right.
Feels just right, yeah.
Now, why does it feel right?
Because it touches, coming back to a much used word, it touches who I am, my reality, my...
All right, now, you say it touches your reality.
Yeah.
In other words, whatever your reality is, if you said something contrary to it, it would not be touched.
Exactly.
If you said, I don't like me.
It doesn't feel right.
Your reality would say to you, boy, are you a joker? You know, you like to pretend, don't you? Now, if you said, I am independently wealthy, what would your reality say?
Yep. It says, yep. That's
now,
right.
What does the world say when you say, I'm independently wealthy? It says, hey, demonstrate whatever you may. And I don't want only hay. You see, this is what we run into when we deal with the world. You say to the world, I'm whole and perfect. And they say, my goodness sakes, you have these problems. You're not whole and perfect. Oh, yes, I am. That's my original integrity, my impurity, my reality. My reality. And they say, well, I see your reality different. Well, number one, I would like to recommend to each of us that we create in our world, create in our experience, only those people who see the same reality we see. Now, what is the reality that we see? Anybody got an idea? What is the reality?
My divine self.
Your divine self?
My divine self is wholeness and perfection, is purity and integrity, is abundance.
Independence. Yes, it is.
They're giggling again, aren't they? All right, now, Anita?
Yes?
What is your divine self? Do you have any idea? Do you have any idea just how wonderful your divine self is? Do you realize just how perfect you are, how magnificent you are, how faultless you are, how fabulous you are?
Yes, I do.
Tell us about it.
You like a short version or the long one?
I like whatever version you can get away with. It's loud enough to say what you really mean.
I really mean that my divine self is my ideal self. That's the kiss version. And the ideal self is my wholeness and perfection, the purity and integrity that I am, the independent wealth that I am, that I like myself, that I'm happy, that I'm unlimited, that I have an unlimited imagination, that I can do anything I want to do.
All right. Ingeborg, the what? You are the what?
I am everything.
You are the divine self. You are the absolute. What?
The ideal.
Oh! Are you the ideal?
The ideal.
The ideal. Are you the ideal, Sylvia?
Yes.
Are you the ideal?
Yes.
Are you, Gertrude?
Yes.
Ellen, are you the ideal?
I'm the ideal.
Are you the ideal?
Yes, I am the ideal.
Ho, ho, ho. Now, tell me what that means. You don't know. You do know that if there are levels of goodness, it's the top, right? Yeah. If there are levels of desirability, that's without judgment, you know, the levels of desirability, that's the top, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your ideal self. Your ideal self. Your ideal, right?
The ideal.
Right?
The ideal.
Huh?
The ideal.
Oh, right, the ideal. I keep saying your ideal. I shouldn't do it. It's the ideal. It's the ideal. Why do we say the ideal?
There's only one concept of ideal.
There's only one concept of ideal. Is that what you said, Christina?
Yes.
I thought that's what you said. It sounded just like you said that. The ideal concept. Now, if I say we have the original document. The original document is pure, beautiful, hot off the press, so to speak, never touched by human hands. Every page is pristine, perfect. Everything is absolutely magnificent. It's the ideal document. Now, Sylvia looks at the document and she says, "Oh, I got colored pencils here. I want to color those pictures." And then Ellen gets in there and she says, "Oh, they need to have some mantras. They need to have some mandalas in here. And you know, brighten up the page, the cover and so forth." And then Christina says, "Oh, they don't have crackle crawl in here. What kind of book is that, you know?" And then Ingeborg says, "My goodness, that won't fit on my wagon. I need to have it a little bigger, you know?" And then what does Gertrude say? Gertrude says, "Hey, I rather like it the way it is. You guys are messing it up." And Gertrude didn't see the original. So she has no idea what it really looked like in the original. And Gertrude said, "I'd rather have it be the original." So then we give Gertrude the original. Yeah, because we had two copies. So we give her an original. And she looks at it and she says, "Oh, this is so colorless. There's no imagination in here. There's no sparkle in here. The colors that you guys put in here are kind of nice." And then, what did Anita do? On the cover, she puts, "I like my body." And she has a Tigger on there. and you say, my goodness, what a book. Okay. Now, your banker comes to you and says, I want an original copy. I want the ideal copy. And so you show him the ideal copy, because you had two copies. One copy you played with, one copy you didn't touch. And he says, oh, beautiful, 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 beautiful. I have the ideal copy. And then you say, well, before you go, you might as well look at the copy that has been slightly transformed by these geniuses who see their ideal expression in it. Oh, that's gorgeous. Oh, that'll sell like hotcakes. Oh, the original is so plain and so ordinary. Oh, this is wonderful. Now, what is he doing? He's pandering, selling to the emotions of the buyer. And the buyer is like most people. They don't want to do anything for themselves. They want it already done. And so they buy it already done. And yet, somewhere down the line, comes another character. And he says, can I add some pictures to the book? No, no, you can't. The original doesn't have that. Well, give me an original, and I will do it. So, his name is M.A. And so, he works on the book. And he draws pictures in it, and he paints pictures in it, and so forth. And when it's done, the book is 6 times thicker, because he's put his interpretation of the stories that he's read. And the publisher says, wow, though your pictures are good, it makes the book too expensive. So we have to cut it back. And back and forth they go. And all of your drawings come and go. Michelangelo's drawings come and go. And the banker, who thought he was so smart by determining what the ideal book was, missed the story. Because he didn't say, I now have the ideal book. What did he say? Ingeborg, can you tell me the words he used? I have my ideal. My ideal. You see, this is what gets us in trouble. Do you want the ideal or my ideal? When you want your original purity and integrity, the original concept, if you will, of Adam and Eve in paradise, if you want the original concept, what's it going to be like? Do you think it's going to be anything like your imagination could offer you? Do you think that, just playing with the Adam and Eve concept, do you think that Adam and Eve are anything like they're pictured? Here's this, the two nudists, Adam and Eve, running around heaven, having a ball. Just having a ball. And they're playing with all the animals there, and they're just enjoying themselves, never thinking about clothing, it's perfect temperature, ideal temperature. And they have plenty of everything for everything. And then, they had something added to the book. And what was added to the book? The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So, which we might just say, they became aware of judgment. Not the judgment. They became aware of judging. And they judged what was done and what they were doing. And where did they ever get the idea of clothing? I mean, nobody wore clothing. Nobody had any clothing. There was no clothing in paradise. There was no clothing at all. Who created that there? Somebody. And somebody wrote the story. But let's go back to the original version of Adam and Eve. You know, just obviously it's not really who we are, but I mean it's a step. What is the ideal version of Adam and Eve? What's the ideal version of Adam and Eve? Anybody?
Uh,
that they lived an unlimited life.
That's even better. They lived unlimited lives in every area of their being. They lived unlimited lives. Did they have enough food?
Yes, sure.
Water?
Yes.
Pure air?
Oh, yeah.
Place to go swimming?
No.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they have friends? Each other?
Yeah.
Or did they have friends?
The animals.
Themselves. Did they know God?
Yep.
Yeah. Did they know everything there was to know about God?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does God judge?
No.
Well, why did they start judging? Because somewhere a little seed was planted in them about judging. And then they started judging. Now, the seed was not their original purity and integrity, was it? Well, the seed is not your original purity and integrity either. Your original purity and integrity is so beautiful and so wonderful and so outstanding that everything isn't... Now, is that a story you like, Christina? The story we're telling about Adam and Eve, the good story? Is that a nice story?
Yes.
Is that a story you could buy? You'd say, okay, I don't mind being Eve. Mm-hmm. I'll take that. Well, I don't need other people in the world. If they're there, that's fine, but I don't need them. You can just see yourself doing that, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
And you can just see Adam running around enjoying himself too. Yeah. And I want to say one more thing. In the original book of Adam and Eve, the story of creation, the foundation book of the Bible, did Adam and Eve have any children? No. Did they need any children? No. Did they love each other? Yes. Did they possess each other? No. In the original... Read the first chapter or so of Genesis about Adam and Eve. The first chapter, actually. And what happens? All was created. All was done. And here is the exciting point, and yet the point that most people don't even see. And after God had finished these things, He said, I am well satisfied in my job. I didn't leave anything out. I didn't put anything extraneous in there. And all that I created was
good and very good.
Good and very good. Now, where did children come from?
Human.
Human. Where did clothing come from? From humans. The human attitude. God cast them out of... Did God cast them out of paradise in the first chapter of Genesis? No. It's the second chapter of Genesis where God is creating them according to man's version of creation. And with that limitation... No, the original purity and integrity. Wow. You know. Do you think that Adam and Eve, living in paradise... See, they lived in paradise. And where was the Garden of Eden? The universe. The entire world. The entire universe. It wasn't just a little place. It was a whole place. The Garden of Eden. He could have said the world, but the world would be a misunderstanding. But the Garden of Eden was all. And then, when judgment came in, when people, Adam and Eve, began to judge things and each other, then everything fell apart. But they didn't do that. They didn't do that in the first chapter. They didn't do that. They had no problems. They were ideal people, living in their ideal spirit, mind, and body, living in their ideal self, in the ideal, in the total ideal, their original purity and integrity. Now, box it off. Think about that. Only after humanity started thinking that some things were good and some things were bad. Only after the consciousness of man started to add those things to its thought, then trouble started. Now, what do you think? Do you judge? Or do you want to be loving about everything? Do you want to make a statement, this is what it is, and somebody else says something, well, I said that, but I said it, and I said it, we said that. And you know, hey, every one of your statements represents your level of awareness, your level of consciousness, your level of acceptance, your level of being in your divine awareness. And it's good. And who is to say that your level is better than someone else's or someone else is better than yours? No, you don't do that. That's judgment. What we say is, hey, thank you for leading me with your thinking into this wonderful realm of my divinity. Thank you for opening the doors of my consciousness with your well-defined words. You know, these are beautiful. But never put down anybody's words, because that may be just the words that you're looking for to lift yourself up. It's wonderful. Okay. Well, didn't know we were going to get on the Garden of Eden, did we? Mm-hmm. But isn't it interesting? It's very interesting. Yeah. Think about it. Read about it later if you wish. Because it's one of our prisoners, one of our men in prison, he said that, how do you put it, Alan? That the Bible is a joke, that he said that the stories of the Bible were incorrect or something like that.
Lies,
yeah, that's the word he had. He said everything that we read in the Bible is a lie. Well, now, what is this man doing? He is frustrated. He feels that all of the things that he learned as a child in the Bible and all the things he saw in life reflecting the teaching of the Bible wasn't balanced. It didn't make sense. And so he wants to call everything a lie. But he made a big mistake. He made a big mistake, one bigger than what put him in prison. And the mistake that he made was he let us come into his life. Because now that we're in his life, he's going to realize he is the Bible. He is the creator. He is the one who wrote all that stuff. And he's the one who interprets it. And he, if it's going to be a liar, it'll be him. And you can be sure he's not going to be a liar. He's going to be a man of truth. Now you watch as we unfold the saga of this fellow. It'll be very fascinating to see it happen. And why did he go to the prison at that time that he met that man who was one of our students who brought him to this university? Why? Why?
He was ready.
He was ready to take a new point of view. A point of view like Sylvia might have pointed out, or Ingeborg might have pointed out, or Gertrude might have pointed out, or Ellen, or Christina, or Anita, or Herb. Who knows what point of view he's going to take? You know? Who knows? Very interesting. Now, we teach about affirmations that they are just wonderful tools to use. Don't worry about them in any way. They're just tools. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. It's not very exciting, but it's a definite little story. My son. My son builds ultralight airplanes. And he was bored in building ultralight airplanes because he did things and he had to wait for his staff to build it into the plane before he could test it. So he's not sitting around twiddling his thumbs, you know. That's twiddling your thumbs is doing this, you know. He's not doing that. Hey, what is he doing? His old brain is going, doo, 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 I got ideas for you. Da-da-da-da. Let's dance with these ideas and sing with these brain stem cells that are pouring out into your brain. And so one stem cell said to him, Mark, that's my son's name, design an airplane engine that will do what your ultralight airplanes need done. Very small, only 4 inches thick and maybe 18 inches diameter, circular, and make it pollution free. Oh, Mark said, that's good. I like that. I buy that, you know. And make it so that it gets buku miles per gallon. You know, really good gas mileage. And burns pollution free. Well, Mark did it. And he designed it so it was exquisite. 99% pollution free. But then somebody said they needed one with more power. So as he had to make more power, he had to refigure all of his figures so that the pollution-free aspect remained there, because that meant the cylinders or whatever the things were there would all come up at the point with instant combustion before the cylinder head opened to take in oxygen and start over again. And he had it designed, and he did it. And he did it. And people all over the world are coming to him, wanting to buy it from him, wanting to take it over and manufacture it. And so, and he's not too interested in that. Why? Why isn't he too interested? He's just interested in dreaming. He's interested in creating new dreams, creating new ideas. Has his friend say to him, "My gosh, Mark, how can we ever keep up with your airplane? Every time we build and design your airplanes, you got new ideas coming out on improvements on it, and we naturally have to have the improvements. You know, we're from Microsoft. We have to have these upgrades, even though it means a lot of extra work for us. We have to have these upgrades." Well, they want the improvements. But Mark's planes work perfectly without the improvement. Everybody who buys them feels that they have bought the most magnificent airplane available for an ultralight. Now, I'm not trying to toot my son's horn. He does that very well. All I'm saying to you is he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He could be so rich that, you know, it would startle you. But he doesn't. He is into the ideas, the concept, the original purity and integrity. And you know, I believe within not too far, too many years or months, that he will come up with the eternal combustion machine. That what is it? It works forever. You know? That it uses no gas. That naturally then it has no pollution. And it runs forever. The parts do not wear out. Because the parts are always a whisper away from each other. They're so finely tuned, they never touch. But yet they're always functioning perfectly. Now, is that possible?
Yep.
Sure. Does it already exist somewhere? Sure. It exists in his mind. And you watch. He'll bring it out. And what does he do? He has a 3D design system on his computer where he takes the engine part and he puts it here and he could turn it around and look at it upside down and around here, and then he could put tensile strength on it and see where it needs to have more power and more strength in the metals so that it'll do the work that he wants it to do. And then he can trim metal off of here, and he wants to trim metal off not because of expense but because of weight. And the lighter he can get this and have it be perfect, that's his purpose. Now, he's doing that beautifully on the drafting board. They used to have to do it with the metal itself. And that was not too many years ago. But now he does it on his computer. Turning it, checking it, and it all comes out perfect. Now, Mark didn't have a degree in engineering, but he has the knowledge that all engineers have and more. What does Mark have that everyone would like to have who are in the inventive field?
His creativity.
Everyone would like to have his creativity.
Yeah, his inner genius.
His inner genius.
Imagination.
His imagination. You got a state. I don't want to stop you if you have one, but I don't want you to have one if you don't have one. Okay, Ellen?
He follows his inspiration.
What?
He follows his inspiration.
He follows his inspiration. Illumination, imagination, that's true.
He listens within.
He listens within, simply enough. And did you have anything to add? Just the lovely... So, fine. Now, think of these things. Think of these things. They're wonderful. We're wonderful. And dream. What she's dreaming about is Mark's airplanes. And she thinks that he's just so wonderful. She just loves my son. She thinks he's the most wonderful man in the world.
There you go.
And we would never stop her, would we?
No.
Now, what's the benefit of saying, I like me? Well, what you do is you are, see, these are work orders, you might say. These are directives. These are directives or work orders to what? To our stem cells. To our stem cells. This is what we have pasted up on our bulletin board. And when our stem cells come to see what their jobs are, they look on the bulletin board. I like me. I'm divine order. I'm peace. My stem cells reveal my original purity and integrity. I like that one. My stem cells reveal my original purity and integrity. So every one of the stem cells takes off on that. My goodness, would we be our original purity and integrity fast? Or there's a couple of rogues in there and they say, yeah, I like this. I like me. I like me. I like me. And when they do that, is anything impossible when you say, I like me? Everything is an ease. Everything's simple. You say, I like me? Wow! You can do anything. Now, are you ready to put a cause like that in motion for yourself? I like me? I like me? I like me? I like me?
Yes. What?
Yes?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
You said yes?
Yes.
When?
Now.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. Now, that is not silly. That is really real. Now. Okay. Sylvia, you just lied to me. You cannot do it now because now just passed. And now it's just passed again. And now it's just passed again. And you still haven't done it.
She still does.
Well, now it's always.
She has already done.
Now, are you trying to tell me there is no past or future, there's only now?
Yeah.
Where did you get such a harebrained idea?
From within.
From the scientists. The scientists said there's only a here and now. That's what they said. Ask any of them. There's only here and now. Which is really what the whole thing is all about. But it sounds illogical. And the reason it sounds illogical is that you and I are motion pictures. We have a past and a present and a future. And we're rolling out the stream. You know? You just wait till I learn how to drive. I'll show you a thing or two. You just wait till I learn how to swim and I'll do this. You just wait, you know? Well, if you don't do it now, you never will do it. Now is the only time there is. What do we teach? First
person, present tense, positive.
First person, present tense, positive. Live in the now. What does Eckhart Tolle teach? I mean, he must be an idiot. He has a book that says now on the cover. How can you have now when the book was printed a year ago, you know? How can you have now if you're reading the book in a century from now and you look back and say, oh, that was then. Now is different. Is his now universal?
Yes.
How can he make his now universal?
Because it's a concept.
Oh, is that right? It's a concept. And the concept is, like Ingeborg would say, the ideal. The concept. It doesn't do me any good to say that she's getting it here in her consciousness. But anyhow. Right, Ingeborg? Right, Ingeborg? Right, Ingeborg? Gertrude looks at me when I call her Ingeborg and she says, don't you know who you're talking to? Ingeborg, who are you? come. Shmup. I am God. I am good. I am the allness. I am the isness. I am Gertrude Suter. I am the man. I am the being that knows all, is all, and enjoys all. And I do it when?
Now.
You're looking sort of askant. I want you to be ready to play these games with me. Because society plays this game with you. And society is always trying to put you off. Always trying to give you a hard time. Not because they want to hurt you or something, but because they don't believe it themselves. Society is afraid to say that. Because if they say that, then they have to believe that too. And if they believe that and say that, then that's the way it'll be for them. Now, think of this. If you say, there is time and there is space, then what happens? You act as though there is time and space, and you create yourself believing in time and space. And you think that your time and space are real. You think that that's where it's all at. But is it? You're just playing a game. That's the illusion. That's the real illusion. Now, why is that an illusion? Christina, can you tell me why time and space are an illusion? What relative to them tells you that they're an illusion? What's the thing about truth that always is? Truth, what? I'm just trying to put words in your mouth. Truth never changes, right? Time and space always changes. Time and space is always changing. You're always having another second, another moment. You're having another place in which you're thinking. I put you all out on planet X, and you're on planet X, and some of you are creative, and you say, I'm going to make this the planet of unconditional love. And so you create it as the planet of unconditional love. And everybody looks at you and says, you're crazy. Why take this desert derelictic place and make a heaven out of it? Why do that? Now, why would Gertrude do that? Come. Why would she do that?
Because he wouldn't do it.
Because wherever Gertrude is the now, and wherever Gertrude is whoever Gertrude is, and Gertrude is what?
Unconditional love.
Gertrude is heaven. Gertrude is unlimited. Gertrude is fantastic. Now, is that true?
Yes.
Okay. We read the other day that what denomination, what type of money has the largest printing in the world?
Oh, Monopoly.
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 Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Monopoly, there's more money printed for the Monopoly game than for any country in the world. Now you say, but the billions of dollars. Well, yeah, look at how much is published. Perhaps not the denomination, but maybe it's the denomination too. But the article said that Monopoly has the largest volume of money published than any money in the world. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what is Monopoly?
Games.
It's a game. It's an illusion. It's constantly changing. And people who play Monopoly are playing a game and know it. But they don't act like it. They want to get all the money they can get. They want to get all the property they can get. They want to stop you and make you land on their property and pay big prices of rent, you know. They want to, you know, gouge you, you know. And you know, thinking of that now in that respect, when you play Monopoly with a genius, now listen to this. When you play Monopoly with a genius, the genius wins and you are glad for him. And he does not have to have one unhappy attitude in his mind I got you, I got you, I got you. He just goes out there and operates under a perfectly balanced way and a loving way. And everybody loves a genius. Everybody thinks he's wonderful, wishing they could have that attitude themselves. But what does he do? Why does he win? Why does he is he a success? He lives in
the abundant consciousness.
He lives in the now.
Okay.
True, he lives in the abundant consciousness. But he lives in the now. Everything he does is now. He doesn't look forward to what he's going to do with his money. He just stacks it up there. He doesn't look forward to how he's going to manipulate the railroads and how he's going to bring down the price of oil and things like that because he owns everything. He just owns everything. He's like Bill Gates, who found out all of a sudden that he was the richest man in the world. Before Bill Gates was told he was the richest man in the world, do you think he knew he was the richest man in the world? No idea. That was not his intention nor his desire. And now his intention and desire is, how do we get rid of it? And you see, he shouldn't really worry. I think Bill Gates should take all of his money that he wants to get rid of and give it to the United States government and let them cut taxes. Wouldn't that be interesting? Just imagine. It probably wouldn't be a very large amount of taxes that would be cut, but because they're spending trillions and trillions and trillions, but it would be a little slap in there, a little reduction. Or let him pay the taxes for all the poor people. Anyone who has a taxable income of, let's say, $10,000 a year or under, he would pay all their taxes. He could afford that, and he'd have plenty to do. And what would happen? Those people would have that much more money to spend on beer and wine, you know.
On Microsoft software.
On Microsoft software, there you go. Yeah, yeah. Yeah? Now, looking at that again, I like me. Who likes themselves in Apple?
Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Name.
Hmm?
Paul. Who?
In Apple.
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs?
Steve.
Why does Steve Jobs like himself?
Because he's successful.
And you know what Steve Jobs did? He went to every school in the United States and every library in the United States and donated Apple computers to them.
Oh, smart.
And do you think that his business is shooing? He does not make money on selling Apple computers. He makes money on selling what?
iPhones.
Software. Yes. He makes money on selling software and on having people need it because it's proprietary and have to buy more and more and more. Now, when he puts these in schools and libraries all over the country, what happens? People learn how to use a computer on an Apple. And so therefore they go and buy Apples. And since he's been doing that, it didn't happen immediately, but since he's been doing that, he's the only one who has all Apples in all the stores, in all the libraries and schools. And only Apple is the one that everybody talks about, thinks about. Now what else did he do? What else did Mr. Jobs do? He created the most attractive, desirable-looking objects that anyone ever thought of creating in the computer industry. He created iPods that had music on them with 30 gigabytes of, and more, 30 and 40 gigabytes of memory on the little iPod like this, you know, like we have several of them, and it can hold millions of songs. Millions. So you go around and you got all these songs. You could have the variety with it. You could plug it in at home and have it on your equipment. And fantastic. But that wasn't enough, because a lot of people didn't like to carry that big thing around. So what did he do?
He made it tiny.
He created a tiny one. one that's only about an inch and a half, an inch and a half, and maybe only about a quarter of an inch thick. And in there, he created something that would carry about 8,000 songs. 8,000 songs. Can you imagine that? And people have earphones, or they can put it into their speaker system, and they have all this music right with. Just imagine what happens. People no longer need to have phonograph records. Remember how many phonograph records we used to have? Remember? And how you had to be careful of them? Remember how the discs are on your computer? You got to be careful of them. Well, you can put your disc right on those and have them be available for you. And when you need to have that information for that disc, you just call it up. And when that disc is outdated, you just erase it and put something else on there. It's so natural. But it's because Steve Jobs was working for his company, and then he got fired from his own company. They kicked him out. And the company went downhill. And he says, well, if you want my help, I'm here, you know. So then for nothing, he went in and helped them. And in the process, because of his investments, he became a very, very multi-billionaire himself. And he built the company up. Because he went over to Norway, he went over to these Scandinavian countries, and he found these genius idiots who were just as crazy as he was. He wanted a little device that was so perfect that you couldn't see the screw holes on it. It was so magnificent, so light, and so magnificent, and it was with no errors with it. The Apple software, Macintosh software and stuff like that, has almost no crashes. No crashes, but the PCs do. Now, what's he doing? You see, he just said, I like me. And so his company dumped him, and he went off and did his own thing. And then his company said, help us, help us. And he came back. He says, okay, I'll help you. One condition. Let me do anything I want to do. In my way. And so he did. And he says, I'm not taking any salary, but I'm investing in the company. Yeah. And he just became a multi-billionaire. But you see, he said, I like me. And he says, I like what I do. He says, I am divine order. He says, I am the pattern of perfection, the pattern of magnificence, the pattern of everything beautiful. This is who he said he was. And that's rather good, you know. And then he said, I am peace. Other people were saying, getting all shook up. What does he do? He cuts his hair off. Why bother? I don't know. I don't think he has a mustache. And he takes off his clothes and puts on a pair of Levi's and a t-shirt and tennis shoes. What are things they always, tennis shoes, sporting shoes, you know, or what? Tennis shoes. We all know what that means. And colorful ones. And he appears on stage before millions of people, hundreds of people, thousands of people, and he goes to his office, and he does whatever he does, and that's him. That's him. Now, many other entrepreneurs are trying to do likewise by wearing the black jeans and, be nothing, be casual. But the brain, the genius, the flow is there because he lives in the now. And he lives in the idea of, I like me. Really, Steve Jobs likes himself. And when he gets up on stage, what does he do? He walks up on stage with nothing but a big screen behind him. And then he flashes on that screen his new products. He's wearing his black clothes and his head is floating around up there. Charming as can be. Charming as can be. And everybody buys like crazy everything he has. Because he is such a hard taskmaster on himself. I want perfection. I like me. I will not put up with anything less than perfection. And so he has maybe 20 people or more working on the same project. And the one who comes up with it first is it. And now the Samsung company has always been a well-represented company and a good company. Well, they took after him. And they hired a whole bunch of beautiful young people to go and change over the Samsung equipment, computers, screens, everything, to be as classy as Steve Jobs has done. And then what other happened? Another couple of kids came along who liked themselves. They called themselves Google. Google. And these stupid kids, you know what they did? They have employees by the thousands working in their big operation up in Silicon Valley. And they have a cafeteria free. Free hamburgers, free steaks, free everything. And you can go and eat anytime you want. And they have soda water and other things, probably not beer and wine, but just normal non-alcoholic things that are available to anybody, anytime. And a playground for the children. If you're a working mother and you need to have a place for your kids to play, they have the playground for the kids, a supervised playground. And they have tennis courts and they have swimming pools. During your off time, you can go and play. They want these brains to work together, these stem cells that are harmonious with each other. They want to be grouped together. And these stem cells of these geniuses that are at Google, that are at Yahoo, that are at Microsoft, that are at Apple, they want them all. They're smart. Ho-ho, they're smart. But the real smart ones are making it so that they're taking care of their family. They're making it available so that these brains can just explode. And still, if they got kids, they can go take care of them. And I don't know this, but I would imagine they have a place for pets too. So that people can bring their pets there when they're at work, and the pets will be taken care of. You know, why not? I mean, some people love their pets more than they would love a child, because they've never had a child and they never will. You know, that would be the unmarried couples who have a pet, you know. Like people living together and not having children or everything, but they deserve to have all the rights that anybody else has. You know, have somebody take care of their pet while they're at work. Neat, huh? Now, the only thing I would be happy not to see, and it has not happened, is that they don't make a commune. Because once they make a commune, you know what's going to happen? These genius minds who are living on their white stem cells, who are living in their purity and their goodness, will not be available to infiltrate the rest of the world with their magic, with their wonder. If they're in a commune, if they're so everything is done together, pretty soon what happens? For lack of new, fresh ideas that come from people who are not associated with them, not that they will make negative their positive attitudes, but that will sort of stimulate them to new thought. When Sylvia, you don't know beans about that. You can't work this out. This is beyond your... I'm going to go someplace else. And Sylvia says, oh, what the heck is she saying to me? And she jumps on her computer and goes into the internet, and she finds out about these things and that thing, and pretty soon, boom, 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 her genius is sparkled, but only because she got inspired somehow. She got inspired. But if she were in the community that just accepted her as she was, and no inspiration, nothing to push her onward, no goad, no catalyst for her, she would stay static. That's what happened to Steve Jobs when he had his business. He was static for a while. And the business went along just fine, but it didn't grow. And then when he got kicked out, he said, what the hell? I gave him my best and they didn't appreciate it. And then when they wanted him back, yeah, I'll come back, but I'm going to do it my own way. And I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to have any problems. I'm just going to do it my way. And he's done it his way and proven that's a good way. I am peace. You can imagine, here he is, running this multi-trillion dollar business. And he's a very calm, peaceful guy. And the boys who are running Google, they're calm, peaceful guys. And you know what they're doing? They're thinking of doing other things besides their wonderful thing. They're thinking of creating, what are they doing? They're creating new software. They're creating new...
creating a Google phone.
New hardware. A Google phone, which is going to compete with the iPhone. And it'll be great because they stimulate each other. each one coming up with more and more. If iPhone has 5 items, Google phone's going to have 10. And then the next iPhone that comes out will have 20. And my goodness, it'll be like our computers. They've got so much to offer that you can't begin to use it all. And that's fun. And that's what life should be all about. It should be fun. My stem cells reveal my original purity and integrity in me. What's my original purity and integrity in me? It's my uninhibited imagination running free. My uninhibited imagination in me running free. My uninhibited imagination in me running free. And it's wonderful. Have a nice pause. I love you.